You guys, Flickers of Fear time. Now, you guys, if you've been watching my show for any length of time, you'll know what a massive fan of David Lynch I am. And actually, we haven't, Tom's not a huge fan, so we don't do a lot of David Lynch on the show. I actually did do a review of Mulholland Drive, which is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Not even probably, easily one of my favorite movies of all time. And I did that by myself like a few years ago and went on and on for almost an hour about it, which is something that happens when I start talking about David Lynch movies, particularly Mulholland Drive, because I think it's just, honestly, it's my favorite movie of his and it's kind of a masterpiece. So I had been wanting to do some more David Lynch, and so I ordered a couple that I didn't have, and this is one of the ones that I ordered. This is Lost Highway. Now, I had actually seen this probably, I don't remember if I saw it in the theater. I very well might have. It got kind of a very limited release, so maybe I didn't. But I'm pretty sure that I saw it like not too long after it came out back in 1997. And I remember really liking it then, but it didn't stick with me the same way that Mulholland Drive did. And in some ways, I feel like Lost Highway is almost like, I want to say it's like a practice run for Mulholland Drive, but thematically, visually, it's very similar. Like, it explores a lot of the same themes. There's a lot of the same symbolism. There's a lot of the same, you know, kind of plot tropes of, you know, identity switching and, you know, kind of dream narrative, I guess. And in a way, I kind of feel like Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, and the movie that came after it, which is Inland Empire, which I'm going to get to eventually because I bought that one as well, are almost kind of like a weird, like, loose trilogy, because not only are they all concerned with reality versus subjective interpretation sort of themes, but they also, like I said, have the same symbolism in a lot of senses, and they also all kind of explore Hollywood in a broader sense, like. And they're all kind of like meta commentaries on film and filmmaking in general. So in that sense, I kind of feel like Lost Highway was the first one of that. And even though I love Lost Highway, I feel like those, it didn't really come to fruition until Mulholland Drive, which, like I said, I think was his, I think that was like such a distillation of all of David Lynch's, you know, thematic things that he likes to go into. And I just think that was perfectly distilled in a way that was still accessible to audiences, but still retained that mystery, that puzzle box thing that he had going on. Whereas I feel like when Lost Highway first came out, you know, as with a lot of David Lynch movies, I feel like when it first came out in 1997, critics were kind of like real mixed on it. Like, some of them recognized that it was a great movie, but then some of them were kind of like, you know, Siskel and Ebert most famously, they were like, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, not a straight ahead narrative and stuff, which, like I said, that's kind of been thrown at David Lynch a lot. But rewatching it again, because like I said, I kind of feel like I maybe haven't seen Lost Highway for at least 10 years, maybe longer. Watching it again, especially in light of rewatching Mulholland Drive several times, like in the last few years. And so watching Lost Highway again through that lens, to me, it almost seemed not straightforward, but it seems a lot more coherent than maybe it was given credit for at the time. And maybe that's easy for me to say now because I'm going back, you know, in hindsight, it's easy to say, because after Mulholland Drive came out, and that one, like I said, it's not straightforward, but if you watch it enough times, the structure of it becomes a lot more apparent. And I'm not saying that there's one easy way to solve it. You know, there are multiple interpretations, but I think, you know, the main overarching, you know, narrative of it is kind of like pretty straightforward. And I think Lost Highway is kind of the same. So it's interesting. So now I'm going to have to like watch Inland Empire and see if I can, because I've only seen that one a couple of times. And that one has, like I said, also a similar thematic thrust of, you know, narrative identity and your, almost like the way reality sees you and the way that you see yourself, like maybe your subjective interpretation of yourself or your subjective interpretation of events. That seems like a big theme in all three of these movies. So yeah. So I think what ended up happening with this one, so the movie that he'd made before Lost Highway was Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, which is another one that I own and I will eventually get around to. I want to do like a whole Twin Peaks thing, like with the movie, and because I have all three seasons on Blu-ray as well, and I kind of want to do like a big mega episode at some point. I don't know when I'm going to get around to that, but watching all of the episodes and watching the movie as well. But you know, up until then, I wanted to do some more like little bite-sized Lynch. So he had done Fire Walk with Me, and even though Twin Peaks the TV series was very successful, he made the movie as sort of like a prequel. And it didn't really do all that well, which I don't really get, because I think it's a really awesome movie. But, you know, that's how shit goes. So then Lost Highway came out, and as I said, it seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like some critics kind of recognized, how good it was from the beginning, but a lot of them didn't. A lot of them just didn't like that it didn't seem like a straight-ahead narrative, and they just thought that it was incoherent, which, like I said, I would argue with that. It's really not. But, in the subsequent years, I feel like it's really picked up a lot of a cult following, and people have actually kind of, like, figured out. Like I said, it's not, to me, it doesn't seem like that hard of a movie to figure out, especially in light of Mulholland Drive, which came later on. And, you know, like I said, if you kind of, like, put the same interpretation of Mulholland Drive in this one, like, with a few little tweaks, it's sort of, you're sort of, like, seeing the same thing. So, what happens in Lost Highway? Bill Pullman plays a guy named Fred, and he is a saxophonist, like a jazz musician. He lives in LA with his wife, Renee, who's played by Patricia Arquette. Now, at the very beginning of the movie, you kind of see a few things about these two. The main thing being that they seem like they're in sort of a loveless marriage, I guess. They're a little bit distant, a little bit cold. There's kind of like, there's a kind of uncomfortable sex scene like early on where he's kind of into it and you can tell she's not really into it. And, you know, she's being like kind of condescending, like, it's okay, you know what I mean? And you can see he's kind of seething about it. Now into this, he also kind of seems to suspect that Renee is probably cheating on him, because he's going to play at this club like he does, I presume, most nights of the week. And she tells him, you know, oh, I'm not going tonight. I'm just going to stay home and read. But then when he calls the apartment, like later on, no one answers the phone. Although when he gets home, she's there, but he's still like suspecting. And then he remembers back that when he was at the club, he actually thought that he saw her like leaving the club with this other dude that she knows. So there's that whole thing going on. So he's kind of operating under the assumption that he can't satisfy her, and that she is cheating on him, although he doesn't have any proof of that. Now, into this situation, they start to receive a series of very strange, unmarked VHS tapes, which kind of turn up in these plain manila envelopes, and they turn up like on the front steps of their house. Now, the first of these just seems to be someone with a video camera like filming the front of their house, which is creepy, but you know, they're just kind of like, okay, whatever. But then they start getting more of them, and it starts getting a little more sinister, because then not only do the videotapes show just the outside of their house, but also shows the inside of their house too. And it looks like someone is walking through their house and essentially videotaping them while they're sleeping. And that weirds them out, and so they call the police. Now the police, they come there and they kind of, you know, they kind of take it seriously, but they're just kind of like, well, you know, we can't find any break-in. We can't, you know, maybe you should just get an alarm system. And they're like, well, we have one. We just haven't been using it because it kept going off. So they're like, well, maybe you should just start using it because, you know, nothing bad has happened, but, you know, this is like not that good. So just keep everything like locked down tight. Now, during this sequence, when the police are there, there's a very interesting line that Fred, played by Bill Pullman, says that I think is sort of like the key to, I don't know if I want to say the key to unlocking the whole narrative, but he does say something very interesting. The cops actually ask him if he has a video camera, and his wife Renee says no, Fred doesn't like them, because, and then Fred says, you know, the cops are like, well, yeah, why is that? And Fred says, oh, well, I like to remember things my own way, not necessarily the way that they happened. So again, we're going into a very David Lynchian, particularly during this span of films, this trilogy of films, where what you're seeing on the screen isn't necessarily what really happened. It was someone's subjective interpretation of it, whether it was a dream about it or whether it was like the way that they were recasting it to make themselves not the villain or something like that, which I think is the case here. So after this point, it gets to a thing, because this is where I think a lot of people like got confused about the movie, because it's not kind of like Mulholland Drive. I kind of feel like has a similar structure, although Mulholland Drive, you kind of felt like it was this straight ahead narrative for like, half or three quarters of the movie, and then all of a sudden the blue box opens and everything's different, like everybody's different. This one is almost kind of like the flip side of that, because there's like a little bit at the beginning with Fred and Renee, and you kind of know what's going on with them and the videotapes and everything. And then pretty early on in the film, there's kind of like a reversal, and then suddenly you're following some other guy. Now, one thing I will note in the first part of the film, which is concerned with Fred's character, is that him and Renee go to this party. And while they're at this party, Fred's suspicions about Renee cheating on him with this dude named Andy kind of get a lot more pronounced, because he sees them interacting with one another and they seem kind of like flirty and touching, like, hey, let's not, you know. So he's kind of like, okay. And then, you know, basically Renee is like, hey, why don't you go get me a drink, and I'm just gonna be over here with Andy, kind of thing. And he's just like, okay, I see how this is going. Now, while he's going to get the drink, there's a very famous scene when he goes to get the drink, and he runs into this very, very creepy dude played by Robert Blake, whose character is just credited as the Mystery Man. And the Mystery Man basically says to him, we've met before, haven't we? To which Fred is just kind of like, no, I don't remember that. Now, I will note that prior to this, Fred had had a nightmare. He tells Renee about it, and basically he says, I was walking down the hall, and I saw you in bed. It looked like you, but it wasn't you. And then he sees her wake up, and basically she has the Mystery Man's face for a second, and then like he wakes up and sees her as she normally is. So, as a matter of fact, he has seen the Mystery Man before, but it was ostensibly in a dream. So the Mystery Man says to him, you know, we've met before, and he's like, yeah, I don't remember that. As where do you think we've met before? And then the Mystery Man says, at your house, don't you remember? And he's like, yeah, no, I don't remember that. And then one of the creepiest lines in the film, and I've said before, David Lynch can creep me out like nobody can creep me out. It's like every time, even watching this again, even knowing that scene is coming, it doesn't creep me out as much as the Winky's Diner thing from Mulholland Drive does. But still, every time he talks to that Mystery Man, and the Mystery Man says, we met at your house, don't you remember? And he says, matter of fact, I'm there right now. And he makes that creepy, creepy face. And so he could basically, like, Fred calls his own house, and the Mystery Man answers, even though he's standing right there. You know, and he's like, how did you get in my house? And he's like, you invited me in. He says something like, I'm not in the custom of going places where I'm not wanted. So there's this whole kind of like situation. You're just like, what the fuck is that all about? He gets creeped out as fuck, as you would. And he's kind of asking Andy, the guy he suspects his wife of sleeping with, you know, who is that guy? And she's like, oh, I don't know his name. He's just, he's a friend of Dick Laurent. Now, Dick Laurent is a character that will come up a little bit later. And honestly, I think it might be the very, very first scene of the film, like after the credits, that Fred is in his apartment and somebody comes over his intercom and says Dick Laurent is dead, and he doesn't know who that is, and he doesn't know whose voice it is, and he goes out there and there's nobody there. So he says to Andy, he's like, well, isn't he dead? And the guy's like, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Is he dead? I didn't know that. And he's like, oh, well, I don't know either. I don't know the guy. So like I said, it seems random, but this makes sense like later on. So basically what happens after that is there's a scene where he goes into the house, you know, he sees Renee in bed. She kind of seems alarmed to see him. And then it kind of like cuts to black. And then there's like some flashing lights and stuff, which in a David Lynch movie, and even in Mulholland Drive specifically, he always uses like this kind of like color symbolism. Blue, potentially in like flashing lights, like blue flashing lights, anything like that. Blue usually symbolizes, it's either kind of like crossing a veil between two kind of things, or the presence of evil, that's another thing, or revelation of truth. I've seen that, you know, but he always uses that blue light, like meaning something like that. So at this point in the movie, he kind of like, there's a scene like that. And then the next morning you see him come out and Renee isn't there, and he has another videotape and he watches it by himself. Prior to this, him and Renee had been watching them together and being like creeped out, like, why is somebody filming us while we're sleeping? But now he watches it by himself. On this particular videotape, it shows that Fred has actually killed Renee and chopped her in half, much like the Black Dahlia. I don't think that I've seen any other there must be some other reviewer that brought that up, but it's like, I didn't even notice it like the first time I watched, but her body is bisected. Like she's cut in half. So it's like really, really gruesome. And they only show it for like a second or two, but I'm pretty sure that he was, that David Lynch, because he's very into like old Hollywood lore. And so he's always like making references like that. You know, like I said, the Mulholland Drive had like a lot of, references to like Sunset Boulevard and stuff like that. So I definitely think that that was something to do with like the Black Dahlia murder. So he has cut his wife in half, like, and it's on the videotape. Now at this point, Fred gets arrested for the murder of his wife and he's put on death row. Now, while he's on death row, one of his guards is Henry Rollins, by the way, which I totally forgot that he was in this movie. He's only in it for like a minute or two, but yeah. So while he's on death row, he starts complaining about headaches and all this other kind of stuff. And then there comes a point, and I think this is kind of where everybody was like, okay, now I don't have any idea what's going on. Because prior to this, like the story was pretty straightforward. It was just kind of like this couple that were having problems and somebody was watching their house and then it looked like he killed his wife. So he's put on death row, but then you get the blue flashing lights again, and then suddenly Fred is not in the cell anymore. Now it's a guy, a younger guy named Pete, who's played by Balthazar Getty. Now the cops are just kind of like mystified as to how this could have happened. He's like, hey, what happened to Fred, the guy that was supposed to be in here? This is like some other dude named Pete, so obviously they have to let this guy go. And Pete does not seem to remember how he got there or what happened or anything like that. So from this point of the movie, we're following Pete's narrative. Now, Pete is a younger guy and he works at a garage. And he's pretty popular with the ladies. He's got a girlfriend named Sheila. And then there's some other stuff that happens later on. But so he's working at this garage. And this gangster, Mr. Eddie, who we learn from the bunch of cops, because there's a couple of cops that are tailing Pete because they're like, well, we need to find Fred, the guy that was supposed to be in the cell. And so maybe if we tail Pete, we'll figure out like what happened to Fred. So they're following Pete around, you know, kind of on the down low. So they say, you know, this guy, this gangster named Mr. Eddie, who's played by Robert Loggia, he comes to the garage. This is apparently his favorite garage, and he really, really likes Pete to work on his cars because he's like the best mechanic in the area. So he comes there, and the cops at this point say, you know, oh, Mr. Eddie, that gangster, his real name is Dick Laurent. So now this is like where the two narratives become tied together, right? Because Dick Laurent is apparently a character in both of them. Now, at this point, so Pete fixes his car. There's a kind of like a very funny sequence, which reminds me of the sequence in Mulholland Drive where they go to get that black book and like they go in that office and like end up shooting all those, like the guys end up shooting all those people randomly. So it's like, you know, accidentally. So there's a funny sequence where the gangster, Mr. Eddie, is in the car with like two of his thugs or whatever. And then, Pete is in there too. And there's a guy tailgating and apparently Mr. Eddie really, really doesn't like that. So he basically runs the tailgater, like he lets him go around and then he runs him off the road and like threatens him and beats the shit out of him and stuff because he's just like really, really not having the tailgating. So it's like, it's this funny sequence, but it's also supposed to show how Mr. Eddie is not only like a violent, you know, dude, but also someone who's very, very willing to essentially kill somebody for you know, transgressing like pretty minor rules. So there's that whole thing too. Now, it so happens that when Mr. Eddie brings back one of his other cars to get worked on at the garage, he has with him his latest girlfriend, conquest, whoever, this beautiful platinum blonde named Alice. Now, Alice is also played by Patricia Arquette. So obviously her and Renee, the woman from the first part of the narrative, like with Fred, are either, they're supposed to be like doppelgangers, but honestly, I think they're the same person, and I'll get into that in a little bit. Now, almost immediately, Pete is drawn to Alice, and Alice seems just as like, you know, drawn to him. Eventually she comes back to like pick up the car or she basically comes there in a cab like later on that night and is like, hey, let's go to dinner. So she's, you know, just trying to go after this kid. And he's just, at first he's kind of like, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea because, you know, you're the girlfriend of a very dangerous gangster, but he can't really resist her. So they start unwisely having an affair. Now, as it goes on, Mr. Eddie seems to find out about this affair and shit starts going bad. So basically what Alice tries to persuade Pete to do is, hey, I really need to get away from Mr. Eddie, because there's kind of, she goes into this thing where basically her friend Andy, who was also in the first narrative with Fred, you know, the guy that Fred suspected that she was sleeping with, he had like gotten her a job, and the job ended up being essentially in porn. But she doesn't like say that outright, but it does like come to light later on, at which point Pete gets kind of jealous and annoyed and shit like that about her being in porn and everything. And she's saying she wants to run away. She can't get away from Mr. Eddie. He's like too powerful. So she says, what we're going to do is we're going to go to Andy's house, you know, and I'm going to fuck him or whatever. And then you're going to be there and sneak in the house and you're going to knock him out, or we're going to rob his shit. And then we're going to like take off and we'll all go off and be together. Now, at this point, so Alice is essentially like your traditional film noir, like femme fatale type of character. And again, this is kind of like, she's a different side of Renee. Like I said, these two women are the same woman, you know what I mean? But yeah, I'll get into that in a little bit. In the same way that Mulholland Drive, you know what I mean? You have, you know, the main character who's Betty and who's, you know, Diane. It's the same person. So this is kind of like the thing that's going on here. So they go to Andy's house. The plan seems to be going okay, although I don't know necessarily. Andy ends up getting killed pretty much in a pretty gruesome fashion. Alice doesn't seem all that upset about it. And she's just kind of like, okay, well, let's get the shit and we'll get out of here. I know a guy who's a fence. We'll go there. We'll get the money and then we'll get the fuck out of here. So they go out to the desert. And it turns out that the guy who's the fence, or the guy, the place where they go, is this cabin out in the desert. And in the cabin is the mystery man. Now, the mystery man has also turned up in Pete's narrative. He is a friend of Dick Laurent's, just like in the original part of the Fred narrative that, you know, he was told at the party. And he is also, I don't know like what role he plays necessarily. Like I said, it doesn't matter because I don't think the mystery man is a real person either. But he essentially says almost the same thing over the phone to Pete that he said at the party to Fred earlier. He basically says, you know, we've met before, haven't we? And he's like very menacing. And essentially Mr. Eddie is saying something like, he sort of obliquely warns him that he knows about the affair with him and Alice, and that he's gonna kill him at some point, but he's not gonna tell him when, because it's gonna be like a big surprise. So it's kind of like this oblique sort of threat that he's giving him. What ends up happening after that is that when they get to the desert, they go in the cabin, nobody's there, but then, so Pete and Alice like have sex in front of the car, like in the headlights, like in the desert or whatever at night. And then after that, like Pete keeps saying how much he wants her. And then she kind of like just cuts him off with "you'll never have me," and then walks back into the cabin, and then she disappears, at which point Pete turns back into Fred. Now, after that, they kind of go back to, it's kind of like a time loop sort of thing. So you can kind of extrapolate like what quote unquote really happened and what is just like a subjective interpretation of it. But the timeline of it isn't entirely clear, because there's one point where the mystery man comes back to the cabin once Pete has turned back into Fred. And then the mystery man tells Fred something like, you know, her name's not Alice, like her name's Renee. If she told you her name was Alice, she was lying. And then he says, what's your name? What's your fucking name? So again, Fred and Pete, same person, just different, just subjective interpretations. And like I said, this is why the line that Fred says at the near the beginning of the film about he doesn't like videotapes because he doesn't like to remember things the way they actually happened. He likes to remember things the way he wants to remember them. And that's essentially what's going on here. So after that, like the mystery man, you know, Mr. Eddie shows up, because it turns out that Renee, his wife from the first that he killed, she was the one that was in porn. She was the one that was in with Mr. Eddie, that was sleeping with Mr. Eddie, that was working with Alice, that was making porn films. She was doing all that. It wasn't Alice, like I said, that was the same person. And so what essentially ended up happening was that Fred had gone and to this motel called the Lost Highway. It's actually Lost Highway Hotel. And he found Renee and Mr. Eddie, or Dick Laurent, together. And after suspecting that he had gotten her into porn, she was in porn, he thought she was a whore. So he ends up killing Dick Laurent, or Mr. Eddie. and later on killing Renee. So Fred actually did do all this. He was actually married to a woman named Renee. He did find out that she was having an affair with Mr. Eddie and possibly also with Andy. He also found out that she was making porn films. Also, there was kind of like some snuff film action going on there as well. He found out about all that and ended up killing Mr. Dick Laurent, and ended up killing his wife. And so, and he did get arrested in reality, and he did get put on death row. However, once he was put on death row, he began to dissociate and see himself as Pete in the same way that that Diane in Mulholland Drive is recasting herself as Betty, this sort of innocent, wide-eyed, you know, person who never did anything wrong and just got suckered into bad things by other people. Like, she's kind of, you know, absolving herself of responsibility. That's the same thing that Fred's character is doing. He can't deal with the fact that he killed his wife, that he's that person. So he had to dissociate from himself and play and essentially recast himself as this younger guy who turned up in the death row cell, but he didn't do anything. He got roped into doing things by Alice, this femme fatale, who was like the bad parts of Renee. You know, so that was like, that was her, that side of her, the one that essentially, so what Fred is essentially trying to do is he's trying to blame his wife for the things that he did, because she was a bad person. She was a whore. She was cheating on him. Therefore, she deserved it. And he just kind of got roped into all this, and it wasn't really any fault of his own. So that's kind of like what... So again, this is why this is very similar to Mulholland Drive, because that's a very similar narrative too. It's basically somebody that can't deal with like the horrible reality of what they did, of their own life. You know, much like in Mulholland Drive, where she paid to have a hit out on her girlfriend, and then couldn't deal with it. So she had to like recast her entire life as this other, you know, as this other thing where she couldn't possibly do anything wrong. Everything was outside of herself. Like, she wasn't responsible for anything anymore. And that's kind of the same thing that happens here. He did all these things, but he wanted to blame her. She was a bad person. She had it coming. You know, I'm just this young guy, this innocent guy that got roped into all this by this terrible woman, you know, and I didn't expect it to end up like this. It's also kind of telling that when he recasts himself as Pete, he recasts himself as a much younger guy and a guy who doesn't have any problems getting women. I mean, even the cops that are tailing him, like, make a statement, he gets more pussy than a toilet seat, like they say at some point. So that's, like, significant, because if you'll remember, like, near the beginning of the movie, that, like, that awkward sex scene between Fred and Renee, where it's clear that Fred is not really, like, doing it for her anymore, and she's just kind of laying there going, that's all right, honey, you know, it's that kind of thing. So it's just, like, this very awkward distance between the two of them. But when he recasts himself as this dude, he's got a girlfriend like Sheila, who's kind of like on the side, and then when he starts seeing Alice, like, she's like insatiable, she can't get enough of him, and it's like she's calling him all the time and they're having like super hot sex all the time. So it's funny that he's sort of like recasting himself in that light, because he was like an inadequate lover, I guess, in real life. So he was kind of like trying to make it like he was this big stud, and then he just got fucked over by this woman, and yeah, I killed her, but you know, what are you going to do? She was a whore. She was a terrible person. She talked me into doing all these things and I didn't really want to do them. So that's essentially what the movie is about. He's just kind of trying to absolve himself of the responsibility of what he did. Now, like I said, there's multiple interpretations. I watched a couple of different interpretations of this. And I think one of the interpretations I watched, he said that, one, he thought that the mystery man was a representation of evil. I think, well, that's kind of true as far as it goes. Honestly, I think the mystery man, who does not exist, by the way, I think the mystery man is, he could either be the same as like the bum behind Winky's Diner in Mulholland Drive, as in, I don't think it's necessarily the evil. It's kind of like the evil that Fred does, but it's also like the realization of reality, because I kind of feel like the bum behind Winky's Diner had the same kind of symbolism where this is not only like the ugly side, like all the shitty things that you did that you don't want to face up to, but it's also a symbol of your realization of finally coming to, you know, coming to terms with the fact that this is what you did, that this is the evil that's within you. So I guess it's sort of like evil in that sense. But like I said, he's also, it's significant that the mystery man is seen as the one with the videotape all the time. And the sequences that are on videotape, you presume is the reality of what happened because of the line that Fred gives in the beginning, that it's like he doesn't want to know what really happened. He wants to remember things, so he wants to remember them. So I feel like not only is the mystery man, yes, he represents all of the evil inside of Fred, because significantly it's the mystery man that gives Fred the knife and the gun that he uses to kill Mr. Eddie, like near the end, but he's also trying to show him what he really did, you know what I mean? Because he's trying to like get away from it. He's trying to know, I'm Pete. I got suckered into all this. But the mystery man is trying to like show him these videotapes. No, this is the reality. And he's just not wanting to see it until the end. Also, I'm kind of torn as to whether Pete is a person in reality or if the whole part like of the whole Pete sequence is just Fred, but recast as a different. So I don't know if Pete exists outside of Fred's subjective reality, if that makes any sense. Because I did see another interpretation where they said they thought Pete was a real person and that maybe he was someone that Fred had seen at some point or, you know, related to for whatever reason, and then decided to recast himself as that person, even though he didn't know anything about that person, which has that happened in Mulholland Drive too. You know, where people that Diane saw in her real life, she recast in other parts, like in her dream narrative. So that might be the case here. Like maybe Pete is a real person, but nothing that you see Pete do, you know, in the movie, I think that's all Fred. I think Fred did all that shit. I'm not real clear on killing Andy though. So I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe Fred killed Andy as well, because this other interpretation I saw, they said, no, well, probably Pete actually did kill Andy, but I don't think that makes any sense because I think Pete and Fred are the same person. So I think it would stand to reason that Fred actually killed not only his wife and Mr. Eddie, but I think he also killed Andy as well. It makes sense because they go to the house and it's like he doesn't initially mean to kill Andy. He just means to like knock him out so they can take his shit. But then Andy kind of like gets up and like runs at him, and then he kind of like throws him and he crashes his head into a coffee table. So he almost kills him, quote unquote, accidentally. So again, I think that's, and you know, trying to absolve himself of responsibility. So I definitely think that Fred probably killed Andy as well, because everything you see Pete do, even if Pete is a real person outside, like, but I don't think he has anything to do with the narrative. You know what I mean? I think he's just a cipher. He's just a symbol of Fred's trying to make himself seem innocent, or trying to like get himself out of like all of the bad shit that he did because he can't deal with it. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, I know this has been kind of like rambly as all of my David Lynch shit is. It's like, maybe it's more coherent than it's sounding like to me. That sometimes happens. But whenever I talk about David Lynch movies, I just get really excited, and I'm always just kind of like remembering all of the stuff that happened in it. And then like after I record, I'm just kind of like, oh shit, I forgot to bring up this, that, and the other thing. But I think I kind of covered most of the bases. As I said, my favorite is always going to be Mulholland Drive. I think that's his masterpiece. But I think it's really interesting that this movie seems, like I said, almost like a dry run from Mulholland Drive. It's not the same, but it's very, very thematically similar. You know, there's the whole thing about voyeurism, the whole thing about, there's like a meta commentary on filmmaking, and it's like, you know, is what we see on the film like real, or is like, you know, it's almost kind of like we're making a film of quote unquote reality, but it's not really reality because it's a film. And so he's kind of like making that as well. I think everything was a little bit more coherent, like I said, in Mulholland Drive, but if you've seen that one, and if you kind of have been following David Lynch's stuff and his, you know, a lot of the themes and symbols that he keeps coming back to, honestly, I think Lost Highway is pretty straightforward in that regard. I didn't find it particularly confusing. I didn't really find it all that confusing the first time either, but watching it the second time, I think this is only the second or third time that I've seen it, it was actually very, very clear to me, like, what was going on. I don't know. Maybe people just weren't ready for it in 1997. I don't really know. It would probably play a lot better nowadays, because I feel like, you know, people are a lot more maybe sophisticated about that or have seen that before, so it's kind of like you know how to, you know, interpret things symbolically. Things don't have to be a straight ahead narrative, you know, which this is not. Some of it is, you know, some of it's reality. All the stuff with Fred and Renee at the beginning and, you know, the stuff near the end, that's reality. Like something really did happen, but you're just seeing intertwined with that, you're just seeing someone's subjective interpretation of what happened the way they wanted it to happen, but not the way it actually did happen. So that's all you're seeing. But yeah, so visually, this is really cool. I want to point out too how awesome the soundtrack and the soundscape for this is. Just a fucking great, I mean, he uses like a lot of stuff that I feel like normally he uses kind of a lot of, you know, bluesy, jazzy kind of stuff, where there's a little bit of that in here, but in this, he used like a lot of, you know, Trent Reznor did a lot of music for this. Like there's Marilyn Manson, Rammstein. He did, there's This Mortal Coil, that song, Song to the Siren, which is in here like three times, which is a beautiful song. And I love that. Yeah. David Bowie, they used like, Deranged at the beginning and the end, which I thought was, fantastic. So it's just the soundscape of it. Everything about this is just like a visual treat and an auditory treat, as many of his movies are. But yeah, great film. I feel like it's appreciated now more than it was back in the day. And I'm glad to see that. So if you haven't seen it, if you only seen Mulholland Drive, maybe check this one out and, you know, tell me what you thought about it. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. And I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.